This is an ABC podcast.
We acknowledge Australia's Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples, the traditional custodians of lands, waterways and skies across Australia. We pay our respect to elders past, present and future. Have you ever experienced that moment where you say the wrong thing? You start to speak wanting to be helpful and supportive and then you find the wrong words coming out of your mouth? There's an awkward silence and you just wish the earth would swallow you up and you could disappear. It's actually really common for us to find ourselves avoiding someone who's experienced something tough because we're so scared of saying the wrong thing. We don't want to pressure them, trigger them, make things worse. So we just don't call. We avoid them. This is After the Disaster and I'm Kate Brady. Today we're looking at how to talk to someone who's been through a disaster. And look, even though I've studied this stuff, I've worked in this area for a long time, sometimes I still get it wrong.
Don't be afraid to ask somebody how they're going. I'm Dr. Susie Burke and I'm a psychologist and I work in private practice with people with a whole set of presenting problems, but I also have for many, many years been working in disaster preparedness and disaster recovery. We don't need to be afraid of upsetting people. Like very often giving somebody an opportunity to express some of the feelings that they might have not been expressing or that they've been bottling up is actually a good thing. It can be painful and uncomfortable, but we need to remember not to be frightened of our own uncomfortable feelings watching somebody tear up or be distressed.
So don't be afraid to ask how someone's feeling and don't be afraid of their tears or of your own emotions. Because someone who has experienced a difficult event, they'll have their own way of dealing with it. And that's okay.
Well, there are different trajectories, so different pathways that people take following a disaster. Most people will have maybe a very difficult time at the start, but that they will eventually bounce back. Some people do have a difficult time and don't pick up by themselves or with the help of friends and family. And for those people, you know, if after several months they're still not coping well at work or they're still not coping well at home or their behaviour has changed quite significantly from how they used to behave before the disaster and you're feeling concerned about them, they might be needing some extra support that could be provided by professionals. There are some people that seem to be doing quite well from the start and then have a delayed reaction. So quite some months down the track, maybe 6 months or even up to a year or a couple of years, will all of a sudden have this big dip in functioning. That might be a time when they, you know, might even seek some professional support.
If I'm someone who's feeling I'm awkward, I'm unsure, I'm a bit hesitant about asking someone how they are, what can I do to help settle myself?
Yes, well, the first thing would be a bit of self-talk. You know, I'm going to be brave and I'm going to ask a difficult question and I might upset my friend, but that's not nearly as bad as the disaster that they've been through. And so to not let my discomfort at upsetting my friend, you know, put me off from actually inquiring and being empathic or being sympathetic to them. So that would be the first thing. A little bit of self-talk always goes a good way, long way. And another thing then would be to be relaxing yourself by breathing. So, you know, I often get people to breathe out and to empty their lungs completely and then to hold it empty for about four counts before they let the next breath come in, because that's a really nice way of being able to slow down your breathing and getting into a slower pattern. That can be a good way of calming your anxiety or your nerves.
Is there any serious damage I'm going to do if I'm talking to my friend and they're upset and I'm asking them to tell me about what's happened or how they are?
You're not going to trigger any disastrous reaction in somebody by sympathetically asking them how they're going. And remember that somebody tearing up or crying is not, you know, a disastrous thing to happen, particularly if you're able to show them that you're cool with them expressing that feeling. One of the things that we do always remind the helpers of, however, is that it's not helpful to probe or to compel or to force a person into disclosing more information about what happened than they are comfortable with. So we, you know, encourage people to listen to others sharing their stories, but to not, you know, expect them or require them to divulge information that they're not comfortable with doing.
What shouldn't you say?
One of the important parts of psychological first aid is to communicate hope, you know, and expectancy that the person will recover. But this is one of the hardest things for people to do and can often be one of the more unhelpful ways in which helpers try to help by saying, oh, you'll get better. And whilst that's true and we do want the person who is suffering to have that hopeful perspective, it can sound really trivializing or really trite. So one of the ways in which you can do that is to remind the person to remind themselves that things will get better. So you can say to your friend, just don't forget to remind yourself that things will get better, that it's normal for it to take time, but, you know, but to be hopeful that things will get better. That's a softer way of being able to communicate that hope and that expectancy.
Susie has a clear outline of how to support people who have been through a disaster. So we're going to run through these now. The first thing is to listen.
Listen to people who wish to share their stories. Communicate to the other person that it makes sense to me that you're feeling the way that you're feeling given the experiences that you've gone through. That's such a powerful message to give to the person, because what you're saying to them is, I hear what you're saying. It makes complete sense that that is how you'd be feeling given what you've gone through, and there is no right or wrong way to feel or to respond. The way you're responding is just okay.
Well, that makes sense. Listen and actively hear what they're saying. The next step, encourage them.
So encourage them to recognise they've been through a distressing experience, encourage them to spend time with people, encourage them to take a break from the work of recovery and from the disaster and from the news cycle as well. Even if they feel guilty, putting down your tools is not the same as giving up. It's really important to say yes to activities that would bring pleasure or give you a break. Yes, and to make time for family and friends and for celebrations and for fun and for the normal parts of your life, even though, again, you might not feel like it. So, again, making room for those uncomfortable feelings of guilt or, you know, anxiety or whatever, and do it anyway. Because there's a real risk after a disaster when you're in recovery mode that people don't make time for pleasurable activities. And it is really important for improving our mood and for improving our sense of control and for improving or restoring our sense of purpose in life to have things that we look forward to that are positive activities. Encourage the person that you're caring for or you care about to maintain their routines. So we know that re-establishing routines or having to build new routines if everything in your life has been disrupted and changed is an incredibly important part for maintaining or rebuilding a sense of normalcy and control over your life. And that routines should include taking time to actually make healthy meals and then taking time to eat them and taking time for exercise and taking time for rest and relaxation.
If it's the type of relationship where physical touch is normal between you, that's another good thing to offer.
There's a tremendous power in physical touch to release oxytocin. And oxytocin is one of our real feel-good hormones. It's kind of the love and bonding chemical. And when oxytocin goes up, we feel good. And also when oxytocin goes up, cortisol, which is a stress hormone, goes down. So a 20-second hug is long enough for the oxytocin to be generated. And so at a physical level, that's also a really terrific way of helping somebody to cope with stress.
And finally, remind the person of a few things.
That there's no right or wrong way to feel, that having a cry can be a relief, and to remind them to remind themselves that things will get better and that they do have the ability to manage.
It can be really hard to ask someone how they are, particularly when you know they've been through something difficult. But even if we don't get it exactly right, it's better than not asking at all. After the Disaster has been produced with the support of Australian Red Cross and the University of Melbourne. Our executive producer and editor is Liz Keane from Headline Productions. Fact checks are by Shona Witten. The supervising producer is Philip Ashley-Brown, and our distribution producer is Zoe Walker. Our sound engineer is Grant Walter, and I'm Dr. Kate Brady.
Stay connected in an emergency with ABC Radio, your official emergency broadcaster. Find your local frequency and see incidents in your area at abc.net.au/emergency.